This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. The 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution lays out a process for removing the president from office if he is, quote, unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Today, the author of a provocative new book about the Trump administration told Chuck Todd he spoke to White House officials who routinely referred to the 25th Amendment in conversations around the West Wing. The president today again dismissing that book as his former top advisor Steve Bannon changed his tune and seemed to apologize for helping the author. We get the latest from Kelly O'Donnell at the White House.
Brutal cold on the president's return from Camp David today.
Mr. President.
While a biting wind blew across Twitter as the president blasted again. I have to put up with a fake book written by a totally discredited author, adding, Ronald Reagan had the same problem and handled it well, so will I. On Meet the Press, that author, Michael Wolff, made a striking assertion that senior White House officials regularly discussed constitutional procedures to remove a president.
25th Amendment. They would bring up the 25th Amendment?
Yes. So 25th Amendment is a concept that is alive every day in the White House.
The book's fallout and Mr. Trump's response has made addressing the president's mental fitness a central question.
Genius.
CIA is Director he? Mike Pompeo.
I'm with the president nearly every day. We engage in complex conversations about some of the most weighty matters facing the world.
A more blunt assessment from Senator Lindsey Graham.
I don't think he's crazy. I think he's had a very successful 2017.
Okay. Ousted Trump advisor Steve Bannon gave the author insider White House access. Wolf writes that Bannon accused the president's son of treasonous conduct for a Trump Tower meeting with a Russian lawyer.
I think that he saw this White House as dysfunctional in part, in large part, because it was being run by the president's family.
But today, after the president cast him aside, Bannon backed down with an indirect apology. I regret that my delay in responding to the inaccurate reporting regarding Don Jr. has diverted attention from the president's historical accomplishments. Today, Wolf defended his journalistic methods and his alarming portrait of the president.
This book is not about my view of Donald Trump. It is about the view of all of the people closest to him.
The president has insisted he did not give the author an interview for the book. Michael Wolff says that he had face-to-face interactions with the president, but concedes that Mr. Trump may not have considered those an actual interview. The president heads to Tennessee tomorrow to address a farm-related convention, putting him back in front of a live audience and back in rural America. Kate?
Kelly O'Donnell at the White House tonight. Kelly, thank you. In Los Angeles tonight, the Golden Globe Awards will have a different edge, with Hollywood confronting the issue of sexual misconduct in its ranks and beyond. For some, the preferred color on the red carpet will reflect their concern. Steve Patterson has more tonight.
It's known as Hollywood's biggest party, the award show fueled by fun and more than a little bit of booze. But this year, expect a different tone, starting on the red carpet.
It'll be a very different award show, in my opinion.
The Me Too movement is morphing into Time's Up, a new group, high-powered stars formed to fight sexual misconduct across the country after the scandal swept through Hollywood. Tonight, they're encouraging supporters to wear all black.
It'll be interesting to see how people react on the red carpet, how it's addressed by the host, Seth Meyers, how the winners and the presenters address the issue.
I'm hosting this year's Golden Globes, and we've got a lot to talk about.
Meyers says he'll be walking a very fine line.
This is a different year, and we're very aware of that going into it. So we want to make sure that it's not so serious to the point that it isn't a celebration.
I have never been more vulnerable.
But the elephant in the room, sexual harassment. Audiences will see Christopher Plummer, nominated for his role in All the Money in the World, at the last minute replacing Kevin Spacey, embroiled in his own harassment scandals. Also a concern, security. Months after the Las Vegas mass shooting, new measures in place. Metal detectors, more barricades, and police patrols. The first big celebration in a new era for Tinseltown, with millions tuning in. It's a heavy load for Hollywood's lightest show. So the expectation is that some of these acceptance speeches tonight will address the scandal. But the Time's Up movement isn't just about raising awareness. It's also about raising money. More than $15 million for a legal defense fund raised so far. Kate?
Steve Patterson out there. We'll check in with Al Roker live on the red carpet a little later as well. Steve, thank you. The blistering cold wave that's kept the East in its grip for 2 weeks now may finally be easing tonight, but not before dozens of new record lows were recorded in the last 24 hours, and not before a lot of chaos for travelers. NBC's Morgan Radford is following all of that and has our report.
New York's Kennedy Airport facing another day of chaos. A water main break in its international terminal leading to power outages and a shutdown of arrivals in one of the nation's busiest airports.
I just found out right now that my bags might be subject to water damage too.
This after a weekend of travel nightmares. Flights canceled, planes delayed for hours, and now passengers scouring aisles of piled bags trying to reunite with lost luggage.
Trying to get my bags for like 3 days. It's crazy.
The bitter chill not loosening its grip on a bulk of the country just yet. In the Midwest, cars sliding off the road due to freezing rain in Springfield, Missouri, while officials in Chicago had to shut down an entire street as icicles dangled dangerously from a city high-rise. In Boston, firefighters working around the clock, battling flames with icy equipment.
The weather conditions have certainly complicated the problem.
Still, some took the freeze in stride. Philly's finest enjoying the snow, steps away from a frozen Schuylkill River. And for researchers in Mount Washington, it might have felt like 94 degrees below zero, but that wasn't enough to literally burst their bubble.
Tonight is the coldest night ever recorded in JFK Airport's history at a record-breaking 6 degrees. Inside, there were power outages at baggage claim and hundreds of flights delayed. This is after authorities say that water main break was caused by a frozen pipe. Kate?
Morgan, put that hood up, would you? Morgan, thank you. And while the East Coast will finally get some relief from the frigid cold, there's more rough weather ahead, including in the Midwest. Meteorologist Dylan Dreyer is with us with what's ahead. Dylan?
Good evening, Kate. That messy system will continue to move through the Midwest overnight and then through Monday, where lake effect snow will kick back in, heavy rain falls down along the Gulf Coast, and then it kind of races away Monday night into Tuesday. Most of the snow that we'll see will be in the form of lake effect snow. Just north of Syracuse, we could see up to 8 inches of snow, about 4 to 6 in Erie, Pennsylvania. But because it's a quick-moving clipper system, max snowfall totals for most people will be about 1 to 2 inches. We could also see about 1 to 2 inches down near New Orleans, where heavy rain is likely with this system. Then after this, as we go through the week, finally some expanding warmth. Chicago should get up to 45 degrees by Wednesday. And man, it's going to feel good down in Atlanta. Temperatures finally getting back up near 60 degrees. Kate?
That's some good news. Dylan Dreyer, thank you. At Camp David this weekend, President Trump said dealing with the opioid drug crisis is one of his top priorities this year, calling it a very difficult situation. More than 250 million prescriptions are written for opioid painkillers each year, and it's part of what's fueling that epidemic. But now a new approach to getting people off those painkillers is having some success. They're called de-prescribing clinics, a place to teach people how to cope with their pain without medication. Our medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres, went to California to see one of them.
Marty Krolukal desperately wanted to get off methadone. She was prescribed the opioid for chronic pain after cancer treatment, but couldn't quit on her own.
After a day and a half, I was in withdrawal, nose running, in pain. I couldn't do it.
But then she met Kelly Garrity, who had also struggled with opioids and had found a way out.
I said, is it possible to get off them? And she said, well, I did.
Breathing in.
They both got help through pain management rehabilitation, a pilot program at Kaiser Permanente in Santa Clara, California. Patients work with doctors to gradually stop taking addictive medications. But more importantly, they work together on coping techniques. There's meditation, physical therapy, even walking as a group.
This is a community. This is what it's all about.
Yeah.
This is what really helps us to move into managing our pain.
Taking opioids rewires the brain so patients can't manage pain on their own and become dependent. But doctors have discovered that working together as a group actually helps to retrain the brain.
Our goal ultimately is to retrain the nervous system
and open new pathways that will allow them to help better manage their pain.
There's no long-term data yet, but so far, emergency room visits for participants are down 80%. Doctor's visits are down 20% as they learn to deal with their pain without drugs.
Today, we're going to go back to the
something Kelly wasn't able to do until she came here more than 2 years ago, dependent on opioids for back pain and feeling helpless.
You're isolated, you're depressed, you're lonely.
She still attends sessions almost daily as both a patient and now a mentor to other patients like Marty. Both women are now off opioids completely.
I'm enjoying life versus just struggling to survive.
It's opened up the possibilities of many things that I did before that I was convinced that I could never do again.
Thanks to their new friendship and support, living life drug-free. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Santa Clara, California.
A disaster at sea tonight after a tanker carrying Iranian oil collided with a Chinese freighter and caught fire off China's east coast. The Chinese government said 32 crew members on the tanker were missing, most of them Iranians. The ship was sailing from Iran to South Korea with just under 1 million barrels of oil. Officials said the crew of the Chinese ship was rescued. And in the South Pacific, a long-dormant island volcano in Papua New Guinea has come to life, forcing the evacuation of the 500 people who live on that island. At this point, the volcano is spewing ash, but there are concerns the eruption could become explosive. There's no confirmed record of that volcano ever having erupted before. Still ahead tonight, a controversy involving planning for the upcoming royal wedding calls to remove some people who live near Windsor Castle. Also, Al Roker live from the red carpet at the Golden Globes. It's a common instinct when it comes to planning a wedding, right? A desire to make everything as neat and orderly and perfect as possible. But when an official in Windsor, just outside London, made a proposal for the upcoming royal wedding, it backfired. Matt Bradley with that story tonight.
James is the kind of character you rarely read about in fairy tales.
I'm not here by choice. I don't want to be on the streets.
But when Prince Harry and American actress Meghan Markle parade through the streets of Windsor outside London for their wedding this spring, some worry the royal spotlight will shine brightly on poverty hiding in the shadow of Queen Elizabeth's castle. A local leader asked police to remove the homeless, saying, "Sadly, there's an epidemic in Windsor." It sparked outrage. Now 80,000 have signed a digital petition demanding police leave them alone. The Prime Minister weighing in.
I think it is important that we councils work hard to ensure that they are providing accommodation for those people who are homeless.
No comment so far from the Prince and his American fiancée, but the royals have a history of fighting homelessness. Prince Harry's brother William even sleeping outside on London streets in 2009. A prince exposing the paupers just outside the castle walls. Matt Bradley, NBC News, London.
As we noted at the top, this is a big night for Hollywood with the Golden Globe Awards coming up right here on NBC. Some of those attending are wearing all black to demonstrate their concern about the issue of sexual misconduct in Hollywood. Let's check in with Al Roker. He's out on the red carpet at the Beverly Hilton. Hey, Al.
Hey, Kate. Good evening. And we are under a perfect sky. We've got right now, there's James Franco, who is nominated for the Disaster Artist, and all these folks are here celebrating, happy and thrilled to be here. But you know, there is a more serious part to this event tonight. Time's up, hashtag Me Too. A number of the actresses have brought activists with them right now. Michelle Williams, Emma Watson, Susan Sarandon, and James Franco joins us now.
Hey, brother.
How's it feeling?
And
today?
My brother.
And your
Dave
brother.
Franco.
So making a movie about perhaps the worst movie ever. It's either genius or somebody thought you were crazy.
I think a lot of people thought we were crazy, including the producer, Seth Rogen. He said, oh, this is crazy. But I just thought, you know, as weird as this story is, it has so much heart, and that if we did it right, that would come across, that it would be a bizarre film, but at the same time, it would be a very universal film.
Well, everybody's just clamoring about it, and we hope you have a great time in there tonight.
Thanks, brother.
Okay, guys, David, thanks, and nice to meet you. And again, a lot of women bringing, the stars bringing activists with them as their dates to talk about what's going on here tonight. It's a dual purpose, Kate. It's celebration, but it's also about activism, and the two are really going together really well, hand in hand. It's a real celebratory feel on this carpet, Kate.
All right, Al Roker out there live, and we'll stay tuned for it. Thanks so much, Al. When we come back, an unusual program that tames wild horses and gives the men training them new purpose in life. Finally tonight, there are tens of thousands of horses running wild in this country, and in Colorado, there's an unusual program to tame some of them. As Harry Smith reports, it's not only about the horses.
By the looks of this spread, someone's put together quite a ranch, a big outfit up in the Colorado Rockies near Canyon City. Inside the pens and corrals are wild horses that until a few months ago were literally running free on the open range. Here, they are gently turned into working stock.
If I can control those back hips, I can control the horse.
Taylor Homertzheim is the trainer, but he sure is no cowboy.
What's it like to be able to be out here working with the horses every day?
Better than anything you could ever imagine. It sucks that I had to come to prison to find this, but I'm super grateful that I did.
You heard that right. Taylor is a criminal, a prisoner of the state of Colorado. Prison Industries here run a program based on the notion that if you can teach a man how to tame an animal like a wild horse, the man himself learns a lot more than a trade.
What's the most important thing you think you've learned out here?
Patience. There's nothing that'll teach you more patience than working a horse, because you can't just jump to a conclusion, be mad, and you know, it's a horse. It feeds off your energy.
But if you can take the reins of your own emotions, the horse will do just about whatever you want it to.
I've been training now about 10 months. I've learned more about responsibility than in my entire life.
Used to be that to train a horse, you had to break it. There is often something broken in the men who find themselves in prison.
How many times you been incarcerated?
Oh, a handful.
David McCormick thinks learning to handle horses has taught him how to handle himself.
You have to have perseverance to deal with your troubles. You have all the elements you have in the community. You have stress factors, so it teaches you how to act as opposed to react like we have in our past.
I sure hope this works for you.
I think I've got it right this time, I really do.
Harry Smith, NBC News, Canyon City, Colorado.
Great story to end with. That is NBC Nightly News on a Sunday night. Lester Holt will be back in tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.